Welcome, family and friends, of my dear father-in-law, our father, our husband, our grandfather, Dr. Ed Goldstein, Zichron Olevracha. We're marking today his 10th yard site. It's very hard to believe it's been 10 years. We're very grateful to Rabbi and Mrs. Bravender for joining us. As we'll hear, the connection between Rabbi Bravender and my father-in-law, Zichron Olevracha, goes very far back. I won't tell the story. I'll let somebody who knows the story tell the story. But I'll just say that my father-in-law took great delight in the fact that after those youthful days in Brooklyn, they managed to reconnect, first by having their three daughters go off to study in a place called Bravender's. And it, apparently in the beginning, they weren't clear that this Bravender was the same Bravender. And then through our own association, working together all these many years, this was a source of a delight and whimsy, which was high value to my father-in-law, the way life unfolds and people connect and reconnect. So we're very appreciative that Rabbi Bravender was able to return. Before the shiur, we're just going to have a very few short divrei zikaron, and we'll begin with some grandchildren or other.
Hello, everyone. My name is Chezi Lanin. I'm Beth and Vladimir's son and Sabaed's fourth grandchild. I want to start off by saying that I get very emotional from these things, so if I get a bit, just bear with me. I've been asked to say a few personal words in Saba's memory to mark his 10th year site. I'll start off by thank you, everyone here, for coming and honoring his memory. So thank you. Through the short 25 years of my life, I've learned a few things. One of those things is that through our lives, only a very short list of people will be pointed out by us as the most influential people in our lives. These select few are marked by us as the people whom have affected us, our behavior, and our actions the most. This varsity of people are responsible of how we molded ourselves and our personalities. Many people will have some effect on us, but only these few will majorly transform us. We can all usually agree on some of these people, and congregationally point them out as our parents, our siblings, maybe if we're lucky, some of our teachers and some of our rabbis. But still, most of us would not be able to point out more than 5 to 10 of these influential people. We meet hundreds and thousands of people through life, as our Facebook accounts can probably testify. But yet, we name just a handful when we think of those whom affected us most. My Sabaed was not one of those few influential people in my life. He is the most influential person in my life. 10 years after his passing, I still find myself in times of dilemma talking to Saba and thinking, what would he do or say right now? You see, to me and to many around me, Saba was not just another man, another Saba. He was our leader, our teacher, our counselor, our doctor, our warm embrace, and our shoulder to cry on, and our joke to laugh. But he wasn't all this just for me and my family, but to so many more. Acquaintances, patients, friends, associates, and total strangers all testify that Sabaed was that also to them. When I look at my own life and aspire to achieve things, what I aspire to achieve most is to be just a little like Saba. Saba had taught us the virtues of love, wisdom, kindness, humor, and humility. He taught us to give more than we take, to aspire to help and to heal others. I am thankful for the short 15 years I got to spend alongside my Saba, because without him and his guidance, I would not have achieved half of what I have achieved, nor what I will achieve. To me, the power of Saba Ed is that 10 years after his passing, he is my guide and my compass, as I imagine he is for the rest of my extended family and many more. We miss you and love you every day, Saba. Yehi zechecha baruch.
Sorry for getting it a bit late.
When my father passed away 10 years ago, the week before Pesach, the joke, which has been told many times since then, is that his parting gift to his wife and three daughters was that they didn't have to clean for Pesach that year. The sons-in-law found it somewhat less funny. But in that spirit, I thank you all for coming tonight, and which might not be the most convenient night out. I agree with Chazi that it's hard to believe that it's been 10 years, both because 10 years is a crazy long amount of time not to have seen my father, but also because he's still, like Chazi said, he's still very present for me. And so in that way, it also seems hard to believe that it's been 10 years. I think of him daily, you know, I'll say something funny and the kids will say, that's a Saba joke. I'll think of a piece of advice he gave me. I'll have conversations with him and then wonder what he thinks about that. When trying to think about what specifically to say about him, I was thinking that he really was, he was many wonderful things. He was a chacham and a gibor and an ashir and mechubad in the ways that Pirkei Avot tell us that we should be. Ayin sham. And I could stand here and speak about many, many things about him, but I decided, since I have to keep it brief, to choose one specific thing that I think was very important to him, which happens also to be very matim for this time of year. In about a week from now, we all will sit around at the table at the Leila Seder, and we will all announce in Aramaic that anybody who needs to should come and join us. While my father's his vision, his actual sight, was probably the weakest of his senses, he had a truly remarkable ability to see people that other people didn't see. For example, if we are having a gathering of some sort, a family simcha, I remember hearing him say many times, so-and-so, he'll probably feel less connected. He's a little bit more on the outs, so let's try to figure out some way to include him better. About religion, I heard him say many times, religion is less about philosophy and theology. It's more about feeling part of a community. And a person is going to feel, is going to retain some sort of connection if they feel like they are part of that community. And they're more likely to leave if they don't feel like they're part of it. Of troubled kids, right? Kids who have difficulty in school. Many times I heard him say that throwing a kid out of a school is beyond the last option that anybody should take, because he would say, right, we do not throw away Jewish children. These are things I heard my father say many, many times. Parshat Mitzora of this week, I always wondered about, it's interesting, right, we read a lot about Mitzora, lots of details, but it, only Chazal are the ones who tell us what the person did wrong, why they became a Mitzora, right? And I imagine my father liking the explanation that it's important to know what a person did wrong, right? It's important to understand that. But the ikar is to recognize the problem and then learn the formula of how you're going to bring that person back into the machane. One story just to illustrate this. I've told the story many times, and maybe some of you have heard me say it, but he was once telling about a case of a patient of his, a Haredi woman, who was hospitalized for some psychiatric illness. Because she was going to be spending a lot of time in the hospital, her family decided they were going to rent a television set for her, right, to keep her entertained. And my father said, under no uncertain terms, you are not allowed to get a television for her. And I remember saying, when he was like recounting this case, I was like, what do you care? You have no problem with television. What do you care if she watches television? And he said, because in her community, watching television is not acceptable. And by allowing her to watch TV, they were saying, you're not important, right? They were pushing her to the side. And he said, as her doctor, I am not allowed to let them do that. And I thought that was unbelievable sensitivity to enabling a person to grow within their own context and not to not pushing your own values on somebody else. I would be remiss, as you might have picked up, in case there are people, for the people here who didn't know my father personally, I would be remiss to give off the impression that my father was all seriousness all the time. in fact, I think it was his ability to be serious about serious things and to see the humor in just about everything else, which made him special. I miss him. I miss him very, very much. I miss his seriousness and I miss his advice, but I mostly miss his fun and his humor. Again, thank you all very much for coming. It's my honor to invite Rabbi Bravender now to come and speak. As Jeff mentioned, we have lots of levels of connection to Rabbi Bravender. He's actually the first one to have known my father of anybody in this room. And I thank you very much for coming. In addition to the shiur being obviously in memory of my father, Abraham Azriel Ben Yitzchak V'Chasya, we'd also like to add l'refuah shlema of my cousin Yitzchak Daniel Ben Chaya Rachel. Who Uncle Ed, is that correct?
Yeah.
Rachel. who Uncle Ed loved very much, his nephew, and I'm sure that he would be glad to share the evening with him. Thank you so much.
I'd like to do a two-part she'ur. The first part will be about the Haggadah, and the second part will be about how I personally met and got to know Dr. Goldstein, Zichrono Livracha. So if you look at the sheet, just so you should know how far we've gotten. First is the Mishnah. I was supposed to speak in English, right? It was pretty amazing. He sounds like he just came from Brooklyn. You know? How did he do that? He speaks English better than I do. I guess where there's a will, there's a way. The first Mishnah in the 10th parak of Psachim. After that, the beginning of the Haggadah has three parts to it. Halach Ma'anya, Manishtana, and Avadim Ayinu. And then there's a section from the Pritzadik, which I hope we'll be able to learn together. First, the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Arei Psachim Samuch Lemincha Lo Yuchal Adam Achetechshach. The Chachamim had this idea that to have kavanah in eating, you have to want to eat. And so if you have to do the mitzvah of eating a matzah, you should be hungry for a matzah. So that's the first halacha. Make sure, if the day is getting later, that you don't eat. Certainly don't eat any matzot. We're machmir, of course, we have about 3,000 years of machmir under our belts. So some people don't eat matzah on the day, some people don't eat matzah from Nisan, some people don't eat matzah from Hanukkah. There's no end to the chumrah that this halakha has generated. The second statement in the Mishnah is afilu anisha b'Yisrael lo yuchal ad sheyaseiv. Yaseiv? Haseiba. Haseiba means the way rich people in Rome ate. And the way they ate was they used to lie in couches and they had assorted servants that brought food to them on little tables. And so they would lie on the couch. I mean, I'm not sure that that's the better way, but that's the way they did it. Chazal thought that on the night of Pesach, when we celebrate freedom, whatever that might mean, we'll think about it, celebrate freedom, we should do it in the way the rich Romans would do it. And what they would do is they would lie on couches and eat. So we also do that. We don't have couches. We have chairs, and chairs are problematic. And even if you had a chair, I remember in Shia they asked the Rav, how do you do it? That's a tricky question to ask a Magid Shia. So the Rav said, well, you go like this, I think. I remember I was there. But, you know, you get old, you don't remember always. So he says, you have to do something. You know, you have to. But the Mishnah says, afilu anisha b'Yisrael lo yuchal et sheyaseiv. Can you imagine poor people, the people who really don't have much and are just scraping together a meal for Pesach? I mean, how do they feel about Haseba? It's kind of like silly, isn't it? It's like, it strikes us as strange that. And then the Mishnah goes on and says, lo yifchitu lo mi'abako sochul yayin v'afilu minatam chui. So arba kosot is another halakha, which is drabanan. Haseba is drabanan. Arba kosot is drabanan. But I guess that drinking a lot of wine at a meal was something that only well-appointed people could do. I mean, you couldn't just do that. You had to have wine. So here the Mishnah says, give them wine. Give the poor people enough wine so they could drink arba kosot. So I just wondered, like, how do they feel, these poor people? How do they feel that they are being pushed into haseba? Or that they are told to drink four cups of wine? Does that make any sense? Does it make them feel better about themselves, about their economic situation, about the way people look at them or think about them? Is that what Chazal meant? I mean, do they feel like they are emancipated because they drink four cups of wine? And what is it that we're talking about? So this is my first problem. I have a problem with this Mishnah. Not with the halachot, with the statement of them, but with the social consciousness that they represent. Then, let's look at the Haggadah. The Haggadah starts with the aforementioned Ha Lachma Anya, right, written in Aramaic. And because it's written in Aramaic, we can assume that it was either written at the time of the end of Bayit Rishon, until the time of the Gaonim. It's very hard to know, because all of that time, Aramaic was spoken by some segment of the Jewish population. It was, in fact, considered, if I remember correctly, the lingua franca of the Middle East. In other words, if a Babylonian wanted to talk to an Egyptian, they would probably talk to each other in Aramaic. So there's an Aramaic statement, which doesn't mean that it comes from Babel. It might come from Babel, but it might also come from Eretz Yisrael. I mean, it just depends on who said it, who wrote it, who put it down. Now, but if you look at the statement, Halach ma'anya de'achalu avatano ba'ara de'mitzrayim, lechem oni. I mean, what could that possibly mean? So usually, the way we understand lechem oni is that it is the... Oh, I saw it in the Haggadah that it's the... the simple meaning of lechem only is the bread that poor people eat, because they can't really take the time to bake and to make fancy kinds of breads that we make today. So that they make a simple kind of bread, very simple, right? Just, and it's very fast. It bakes very quickly. In no time at all, you have whatever it is you look for. So that's lechem oni. But it could also be, it's true, it could be the bread of affliction, right? The word oni could mean torture, affliction. It could also be, as the Gemara says, lechem she'onim alav dvarim harbe, which means the bread that we talk about. We talk about it. We say, oh, this is the bread that they ate. This is the kind of bread they ate at Yitziat Mitzrayim. Let me tell you about Yitziat Mitzrayim. The kind of like a way of getting into it. But the continuation of it, I mean, that's the first statement. Ha lach ma'anya. Ha in Hebrew means zeh. Now, you know, Chazal were very concerned about the word zeh. They thought it was a very important word. And it means when you point at something, you don't have to point. I mean, here's the bread, right? You know, and the Haggadah, the directions in the Haggadah said, you pick it up, you put it down, you point at it, right? So what's the, why point at it? I mean, it's like sitting right there. But you point at it. And everybody looks at the directions in the Haggadah, you know, which have become, generally speaking, like, min hashamayim, you know, the English introductions. Pick up your glass of wine, put down your glass of wine, point your finger at it. So that's halach ma'anya, because when you talk about something and you point at it, you're saying, gee, that's really important. You see that piano over there? See that piano? That's my piano. Well, there's only one piano in the room. But look, the second statement is, Kol dechvin yetei v'yecho. All those who are hungry should come and eat. Well, that's very nice. That's nice. Does that have something to do with Pesach? Maybe, you know, why not be nice on Pesach? It's nothing. I mean, no specific connection. And we don't know that it's Yitziat Mitzrayim. There was a special effort to get the people, the Jews who were hungry, to come and leave Mitzrayim. There seem to be other good reasons for leaving. But this is what it says. Kol b'chvin yetei v'yichol, kol b'tzrich yetei v'yusach. All those who need can come and have a good meal. Yusach, Korban Pesach, the mitzvah. So one would think that this has something to do with the Beit HaMikdash, either Beit Rishon or Beit Sheni. Now comes the ultimate depression. Jews can't do anything happily. They just can't. They have to inject a depressive point. So here it is. You're starting the Seder, right? You're starting the Seder. You said Kiddush, because Kiddush is, you have to say Kiddush. It doesn't have so much to do with Pesach. You have to say Kiddush like Friday night, you say Kiddush, on Yom Tov you say Kiddush, on Pesach you say Kiddush also. Okay, you drink a cup of wine, right? That's the difference between Shabbos and Pesach. On Shabbos, whoever makes Kiddush and drinks wine. If you want to help him drink the wine, you know, like divide it out, you can, but you don't have to. You don't have to. On Pesach, you have to. Everybody has to drink the first kosher. That's the difference between Pesach and Shabbos. This is Pesach and Shabbos. So we say this. Hashata hacha. Hashata hacha. Now we're here. This year. We're here. Here, I guess, means outside of Eretz Yisrael by the continuation. V'shana haba'a ba'arad Yisrael. Next year, we will be in Eretz Yisrael. Okay. I don't know who said that or where it was said. It sounds like it was said outside of Eretz Yisrael, but it could be said in Eretz Yisrael, dominated by some foreign power, where the words Arad Yisrael mean independent Israel, free Israel. But look at the last part. Hashata avdei l'shana haba b'nei chori. Can you imagine that? Who thought of that? Of that line? Hashata avdei means now we are slaves. L'shana haba b'nei chori. Now, I did not write this tonight. This has been in the Haggadah that you look at every single year for the last 2,000 years. Now, what does that mean? What does it mean? It means to me that Yetziat Mitzrayim was a failure. Isn't that what it means? If Yetziat Mitzrayim is supposed to take us from slavery to freedom, clearly, if we are all looking at ourselves and say, Hashata Avdei, we're all still slaves. I don't know where we all are, whether we're in Eretz Yisrael, or we're in Bavel, or in Borough Park, or in Williamsburg. It doesn't matter. If you say Hashat Avdei, and you say L'shana Haba'ah, that's my hope, that L'shana Haba'ah will be B'nei Chorin, sounds to me like somebody looked around at the reality and said that the situation is awful. We are still avadim in Mitzrayim. We still are standing before Yitziat Mitzrayim. Now, what sort of introduction is that to the Haggadah, which is supposed to be the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim in one way or the other? And how is it that it has a life that somebody didn't come along and say, let's erase it. Let's get rid of it. No, it said, what do? We attach tunes to it. We sing it. You know that the highlights of the Seder are all sung, right? Manishtana is sung by anybody under the age of 5, which seems to be the critical point at which you can no longer say Manishtana. And Dayenu. That's the highlight of because I'm not sure whether it's because people like the tune or because they know that the food is about to be served. Probably the latter. But Dayenu is very... But Avadim Ayinu also, we sing it. Why do we sing Avadim? We're so happy. Halach Ma'anya. Avadim Ayinu. Then we have Manishtana. I can't get involved in too involved in Manishtana, because it's really very complicated. But the first question that we ask, that Manishtana Laila Hazeh, Mikol HaLeilot, Shemikol HaLeilot Anochlim, Chameitzu Matzah, HaLaila Hazeh, here the Nusach is Kulo Matzah, HaLaila Hazeh Matzah, right, Chameitzu Matzah. It's not clear. We understand, all of us, we understand. I just want to tell you what the question might be. What this question might really be, that we know why we eat matzah on Pesach. Because the Jews ate matzah when they left Mitzrayim. That's pretty simple. That's pretty simple and straightforward. We eat matzah because they ate matzah. We make matzah the way they made matzah, maybe. And then we eat the matzah. But why is it that we avoid chametz? What does that have to do? What does that have to do with Pesach? Now, you know that most of what we call preparation for Pesach, as far as I can tell, this is like an ad hominem position that I have, seems to be about getting rid of chametz. That's really an enterprise. I mean, you could imagine chametz anywhere, in the cracks between your balatot, in the closets that you never look at, in the clothing that you haven't worn for 20 years. You can imagine all of those places full of chametz and demanding immediate attention. Matzah, you go to whoever tells you matzah, and you say, give me a kilo or 2 kilo or whatever. It's like no effort. Matzah is basically effortless. True, some people like to imagine that they have to bake their own matzahs. Usually it doesn't come out as well. But But the kiyum of the mitzvah of achilat matzah is easy. The kiyum of the mitzvah of getting rid of the chametz is very difficult. Now we know that this idea that you have to ask a question and give an answer is deeply ingrained in the halachot of Pesach. You have to ask the question. You have to ensure that the children ask questions. If the children don't ask, if there are no children, then the wife asks the husband, or the husband can ask the wife, whichever. Otherwise, if you're alone, right, if you're by yourself, you have to ask yourself a question. And then you see at the end of Avadim Hayinu, we'll go to the end before we go to the beginning. Rafilu kulam chachamim, kulanu nevonim, kulanu zekenim, kulanu yodim et haTorah, mitzvah aleinu lesaper biyitziat Mitzrayim, v'kol amarbe lesaper biyitziat Mitzrayim, harei ze meshubach. Even if we know, you know, I remember about 70 Siddurim, me, personally. So I more or less got the idea. You know, I wouldn't put myself in the category of Chachamim and Nevonim and Yodei Torah. I don't put myself, but I'm like a person. You do something for 80 years, for 70 years, and you sort of got it down. And it's not that big a deal. So what is this emphasis that the Haggadah has? Mitzvah le'nisaper mitzvah mitzrayim. We call it marbel esaper. Mitzvah mitzrayim. I remember the story about Tzvi Pesach Frank. Tzvi Pesach Frank was the Rav in Yerushalayim. What? In the good old days. Whose grandfather?
Rabbi Landy's grandfather.
Landy's?
Danny Landy's.
Which?
Rabbi Danny Landy's.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That is correct. He often, he likes to talk about his Haredi relatives. So anyway, she's saying Pesach Frank used to say, do the Haggadah in 10 minutes. He'd come into the house, read the Haggadah, it took him 10 minutes, and they said to him, but it says right here, you have to make it longer and longer. He says, no, you don't understand. People come to ask me shailos on Pesach, he said. Rav Frank was the Rav of Yerushalayim, and people would come, and they'd knock on the door, and they'd say, can I do this? Can I do that? Right? He says, after you drink 4 cups of wine, so you're considered to be a drunk. And a drunk can't paskin a shaila. So what I do is I say the Haggadah as fast as I possibly can. I eat something. Then I go to sleep for a half hour. And then the people come. And the sleep takes away the drunkenness of the wine. And so you see that there are different positions even about this basic idea. But I would like to tell you something about questions and answers. Rav Nachman of Breslov made the following insightful comment. He said, there's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avot that says, Dam al-Hashiv l'apikoros. You should know, it's an obligation. An obligation, the way I understood it, or the way I learned it maybe years ago, it was, there are people all over, there are people who attack you, who say that what you're doing is silly, and you don't really have a rational underpinning for your decision. So you should be able to study a little bit of the argumentation, so you'd be able to speak out against it. That's what the Mishnah meant. That's what I thought the Mishnah meant. Rabbi Nachman said this, that you have to know about the question. Some questions have an answer. Some difficulties can be straightened out. If you have a child who comes home and says, 1 plus 1 is 3, you can help him. You could answer that problem. You could deal with it. But there are questions that you really can't deal with. If somebody tells you that there's no proof for the, no clear and ever-present proof for the existence of God, you have to know that that question might not actually have a clear answer. So that what the Haggadah wants us to do on Pesach is ask questions and determine the limits of the possibilities of the answer. Why is it that the Torah directs us to act as though we were leaving Mitzrayim, as opposed to many other ideas in the Torah? Like we say in the third paragraph of Kriya Shema, where we say Zecher LiYitziat Mitzrayim, we say it again and again and again. What's so bad about that? What is missing by just saying Zecher LiYitziat Mitzrayim or eating a matzah? What way does eating a matzah improve my comprehension of Yitziat Mitzrayim? So that's the question, that the first question. Mamishtana alayla azeh, shebekol alaylot ano oklim chameitzu matzah. And we say, zecher liyitziat Mitzrayim. Bekol alaylot. And that appears in the Haggadah as well. And since that appears in the Haggadah, the bekol alaylot, zecher liyitziat Mitzrayim, what difference does it make, really, if we eat a matzah? What difference does it make if we eat a matzah? And what difference does it make if we avoid chametz or don't avoid chametz? Is that what we're supposed to remember? Why should we remember it? So we have to determine what the question is and to then determine what the limits of that question are. So we've looked at Halach Ma'anya, we looked at Mamishtana, and we just up to Avadim Hayinu. Avadim Hayinu, the power of Mitzrayim, is the first answer that's offered by the Haggadah. The Haggadah offers two answers. One starts with the words Avadim Hayinu, the power of Mitzrayim, and the other answer begins with Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah Hayu Avoteinu. In other words, one answer begins slavery. That's the beginning of the story of Yitziat Mitzrayim. But the other answer begins with Terach. Terach was the Oved Avodah Zarah. We escaped. Avram Avinu took us out of Avodah Zarah and pushed us away from the ways of Terach, his father. And then it says, Ve'yotzi'enu Hashem ulkenu misham b'yad chazakah v'zor netuyah. Right? Ve'ilu. Okay, every word can be kind of thought about. Every word is difficult, but ilu lohotzi hakodesh bochu et avoteinu mitzrayim. If God had not taken our forefathers out of Mitzrayim, hare anu vaneinu vnei baneinu mishubadim ayinu paru mitzrayim. I understand this. Maybe it's because of modernity, maybe it's because of medicine, maybe it's because of the way I was taught to think about things, that there is a genetic change that Bnei Yisrael underwent when they got out of Mitzrayim, at Yitziat Mitzrayim, and that genetic change is called freedom. And it doesn't matter what political situation exists for us. It matters physically. It matters in terms of suffering. It matters in terms of the inability to develop. But it doesn't matter. After Yitziat Mitzrayim, that will never change. That will never change. And I just want to introduce you, if you don't know, I'll introduce you briefly to the Pri Tzadik. That is the Pri Tzadik, Rav Tzadik HaKohen, Lublin, who lived at the beginning, the end of the 19th and the beginning of the 20th century, and he wrote about these topics that we are talking about. So we'll just read a few lines together, and that'll be the end of the day of the shir. The Gemara, Lechem Oni, She'onim Alav Dvarim Harbei, he quotes that Gemara, that the lechem, the matzah, is something that generates a lot of talk, a lot of an attempt to understand. It has to be like a question and an answer. So I think that that's what Rav Nachman was talking about. You have to know what question you could answer. You have to know what topics you could think about and what are beyond you, right? And then he quotes the Gemara. Beno sha'alo v'chulei ishto sha'alato v'imlavu sho'el atzmo. The son asks, the wife asks, if there's no one else there at the Seder, he has to ask himself. V'chein v'ma'amar Rabban Gamliel. Remember, sort of at the end of the Haggadah, before you eat, Rabban Gamliel came along and he said, you have to say these three things. Say them. Pesach, Matzah, Moro. Say it. Pesach, Matzah, Moro. That's not what he meant. He meant that you have to look carefully into it. If they say, why Korban Pesach? Why Matzah? Why Moro? That's what Rabbi Gamliel said. And then he said, Matzah, She'anu Ochlim, Al Shuma. Moro, Al Shuma. Right? What's Al Shuma mean? Al Shuma means question mark. It's a question. It's not a statement, right? It becomes a statement later on, but it's a question. And that question is very, very incisive. Ve'ein omrim stam matzah she'anu ochlim al shem shelo ispik v'chulei. We don't just say it as a direct statement, as though we know something. We don't know, according to Rabban Gamliel. We don't know. We know that the Torah says Pesach al shum. And we know about matzah and moro, but we know what the pasuk says, but we have to understand that we don't mean it. We don't know it really unless we look into it more carefully. Rak derech she'ela u'tshuva. V'hainu, ergo, she'belaila tzarich ha'adam lahargish b'nafsho chadashot. I don't know if Rav Tzadok was a licensed psychiatrist. But he believed that this was actually possible. That it was possible. Tzaricha adam lahargish b'nafsho chadashot. He has to feel new. He has to feel like a new person, a different person. A different person. And the only way to feel that and differentiate this year's feeling from last year's feeling is to look into it even more carefully. She'tzaricha adam lirot et atzmo ki'ilu hu yatza mi'mitzrayim. You have to see that. You have to feel that. You have to hallucinate it. It has to be something that you could actually get into. V'haynu she'az hergish adam b'nafsho hergesh chazak she'yatza min ha'mitzar. You have to feel this powerful feeling that you've kind of gotten out of some terrible situation that you were in. So if in fact, as the Pri Tzadik says, it's an individual obligation to generate a feeling, to understand that the genetic makeup of Am Yisrael changed at the time of Yitziat Mitzrayim, so we understand why the Mishnah, the first Mishnah that we learned, insists that the poor people are also involved. The people for whom haseba and four cups of wine generally don't mean a thing. But on the night of Pesach, they're reconstituted. They could also be possessors of this feeling, of this special feeling that they have. And that's why we're never happy in the struggle between Bavel and Yerushalayim, in the struggle between Galut and Geula. Well, we're never quite happy with what we have, and rightfully so, and rightfully so. Wherever we happen to be, and those of us, you know, those of us who grew up in Brooklyn, who are living in Eretz Yisrael, and live in Yerushalayim, as fortunate as we are, we don't lose sight of the fact that we're not there. But we have to pull harder and work harder and make it better. And that's the struggle that exists always between Bavel and Yerushalayim. And the people in Bavel, you may not have noticed, but next time you're in America, ask them. You'll see that they don't get it. Absolutely not. And that's part of the struggle that exists, so that we have to learn to ask the questions, to know what the limits are, to be able to see ourselves in the special light of those who have achieved freedom, and the freedom from slavery become part of their genetic makeup. And that this will help us, I think, on the night of the Seder, move in that direction. Part two. When Rachel came to Madrid, what was it called then? Bruria. When she came to Bruria. So you know, Bravender is not a common name. I think. But actually, I found somebody who has the same name, but I couldn't figure out how we were related. So maybe it's like... We were sitting in class, we were doing something or other. At the end of class, Rachel raises her hand and says, "Is your parsha Mitzora?" I don't know about you, no one ever asked me that question. Now, it is curious, I mean, although I can't tell you what it means, that this Shabbos is Mitzora, right? So I'll leave that to you. She says, "Is your parsha Mitzora?" So I said, "What kind of question is that?" You know, like, there was no Facebook, and there was no way. Couldn't look it up, and it wouldn't have my parsha in the computer someplace. I said, "Yeah, how do you know?" He says, "Well, my father taught you your bar mitzvah lessons." Well, the name was Goldstein. I didn't think that there was only one Goldstein in the world. It didn't. That didn't occur to me. So yes, it's true that Dr. Goldstein, Zichrono Livracha, taught me my bar mitzvah lessons. He taught me how to lane, and he also taught me how to lane in Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And I used that skill many times in order to make a little money now and then. And but I knew him before he became my teacher for laning, because Dr. Goldstein, Zichrono Livracha, he worked for the library in the Yeshiva Flatbush. I mean, if I'm saying something wrong, you can try to correct me, but I won't agree anyway. He worked for the library. He worked for the library, and I used to go to the library a lot. In those days, in the Yeshiva Flatbush, they gave you two averages. One average was the average of all the marks you got. And then they added on points for reading in Hebrew. So if you read a lot in Hebrew, a lot of Hebrew books, so you could get like your average could be 105, 100. Like it didn't matter to them that the 100 is perfect, but that was the trick. So I discovered that, so Dr. Goldstein worked for the library. The librarian was an interesting person who had read most of the books in the library, and he would test you when you came. So I used to read the Chasamba books. I don't know if anybody... There were these like mystery books that were written in Israel by whoever. You're not going to read them now. It's not the kind of books that anybody would read today. But we used to read these mystery books, and so the librarian, who was something of a maskil, didn't like them. So he didn't really read them. So what he did was he opened up to the first page and he asked the question, who is so-and-so? So when I realized that he only tested me on the first page, it became easy to stack up a lot of pages. Dr. Goldstein hired me, and I was one of the few at the time. I was one of the few kids who was home in the summer. this is not a reflection of my outstanding economic situation. Well, I was home in the summer, and he hired me to give out, in those days, when you came to school, like you came in the 7th grade or the 8th grade, so the books that you needed for your year in school were there. You got them from the school. You didn't have to go to buy them. But the books had to get to the rooms from storage. So Dr. Goldstein was in charge, and I was one of his workers. And that's where I got to meet him. And even though he was, I think he must have been in high school at that time. He went to BTA, right? They didn't have a high school in Flatbush. They didn't have high school. So I went to the high school in Flatbush because I was used to the bus ride. I didn't want to change. So he was in charge, and he had a few people working for him, and I was one of those people. And when my bar mitzvah came up in a remarkably incisive manner, my father, who was a Baal Korin, Zichrono Lebracha, my father also lane and knew how to lane and taught kids how to lane, but he knew that we'd never get along. So he looked for somebody who would teach me to lane, preferably somebody who was around the school, and somehow, I don't know how, he got in touch with Dr. Goldstein, who then became my teacher. I remember him at my bar mitzvah standing next to the bima and helping me out, you know, giving me a little. And the parasha was Mitzorah, just as it is this week. So I feel it's a kind of a privilege to be here tonight and to be able to share Torah with the people who are here. Be well.
Happy birthday.